Kennedy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
To the interview process for the finalists for the position of candidate for regent at the University of Minnesota. And would you like to give us an opening statement, please, of 3 to 5 minutes?
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Well, it's a tremendous privilege to be here this morning, and as I understand it, I'm the last candidate, so I appreciate your perseverance in sticking through this process. Both my wife and I are native Minnesotans. I grew up on a family farm in west central Minnesota, and has been in the family for several generations. My wife is a native to the Kenyon, Faribault, Rochester area, and a proud graduate of Winona State University. And one of my earliest memories, and I think a very positive influencing factor in my life and perhaps some leadership and other things, has been 4-H, and appreciate the role that has played in my life throughout my career. Some things that you're probably a little more familiar with. My undergraduate degree is from the University of Minnesota, so I'm an alum, mm-hmm. I'm a Gopher. And I spent the first 4 quarters, they were on the quarter system at the time, at UMM in Morris. And I'm really quite familiar with all the campuses and the research centers for the University of Minnesota. My graduate degree is from UC Berkeley, and my graduate program was interrupted for a couple years by the Army, and I served... did biomedical research in Denver, Colorado. And then what followed is sort of a somewhat typical academic career as a faculty member in administration at some of the top-tier public universities and land-grant universities in the country, Iowa, Ohio State, Washington State, Maryland, Texas A&M, and now at the University of Maine. And I think my career encompasses one of the most broad experiences in higher education anywhere, including 3 years experience at the National Science Foundation, where I gained great experience with federal funding agencies, and the Washington scene inside the Beltway, which has been very helpful during my career. And this experience includes working in academic affairs, student affairs, budgeting, the legislature, Congress, certainly the public, alumni, parents, and friends of the university. Certainly a lot of interaction with businesses and the private sector, something I think maybe a little bit more special to the role that I've played in Maine. A lot of Division I athletics. Paul and I talked about that a little bit. Fundraising and trustees and regents. Virtually everything that the University of Minnesota is involved in. So that's certainly part of and a large reason for my interest in this very important position. My move to Maine from Texas was probably for many reasons, but one of the most important was to have work more closely with students and to contribute in the unique ways that a state's flagship university can contribute. My background is probably a little bit heavier on the research and development side, and I think that's one of the things that I can probably bring to this very important position and to the regents. This is particularly true in the area of technology transfer and economic development, two areas that are very important for states all across the country right now. And I would cite for that experience Undersecretary of Commerce and Director of the U.S. Patent Office was on campus recently. And the program that we have developed in technology transfer, he said, was as good as or better than any that he had ever seen during his career. So in terms of the economy and the other things right now, I think that's very important, and particularly the technology development role that the University of Minnesota has. I strongly believe that the University of Minnesota is the most important organization to bring the state of Minnesota out of its $6.2 billion malaise, and I think the university in many different ways can have an important role in that effect. Over my career, I've stayed in touch with the university, the foundation, the college, Forestry, Agriculture, and Natural Resources that I graduated from. I'm a proud life member. And in terms of governance experience, really there I think it's been quite broad too, certainly serving as CEO of a complex, large land-grant university, much like the University of Minnesota. I'm familiar with governing boards, regents and trustees from my days at Ohio State or Texas A&M, the University of Maryland. and the University of Maine. A lot of experience at the national level with the land-grant system, the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities, particularly working in the area of alternative energy, Vinyl Haven. And I have a lot of experience, as I indicated briefly earlier, with funding agencies and with most educational foundations throughout my career. In terms of boards that I've served on a software company, board of directors, at a fairly large telecommunications company, the Texas Healthcare and Bioscience Institute, THBI, which is that state's leading voice for the development of biotechnology in the pharmaceutical industry. We've worked, one of my most pleasurable experiences was working with NASA through the Johnson Space Center in Houston and the Baylor College of Medicine and the Texas Medical Center, and worked closely with Dr. Michael DeBakey there, and I was responsible for initiating the DeBakey Institute at Texas A&M in their College of Veterinary Medicine. I'm extremely interested and have followed the University of Minnesota's research and technology development area efforts, and especially in agriculture, medicine, science, and engineering, all areas that I've worked in extensively. My budgeting experience, certainly as CEO of a complex land-grant university over $300 million budget, hundreds of buildings, 7,000 acres, several research centers, very similar in many ways to the University of Minnesota. I would regard myself as a fiscal conservative. We balance the budgets every year, and certainly in these trying times, that's extremely important. I've also led efforts to reduce budgets and programs during state-mandated curtailments. Maine, like many states, has gone through that and continues to wrestle with it. I also managed Texas A&M's research portfolio, which at the time was over $400 million. I've had a personal commitment as well as a professional commitment to diversity through my career and in our personal life. Five of the nine senior cabinet members that I hired and appointed at the University of Maine were women. And two awards that I received at Texas A&M, one for gender diversity, gender efforts, and diversity. The first year that both awards were given, I received both of them, and particularly proud of that in terms of my career accomplishments. The Hopwood decision was handed down at the time that I was at Texas A&M that eliminated all affirmative action policies, and we worked our way through that quite successfully, and in fact, we're able to enhance our minority recruiting. Maine, like Minnesota, has a very significant American Indian or Native American population. I've worked very closely and supported and enhanced our Native American Studies program, our Wabanaki Center, our Franco-American Studies program, and the Franco-American Center. And it's also a personal commitment that Mary and I have through Operation Breaking Stereotypes in Maine and cooperating with New York City that we've maintained connections with. I think one of my leadership strengths, if I could, probably in terms of visioning and being able to carry through and implement the programs for the university. The role and the scope of a regent's responsibilities, it's a tremendous honor, but it carries great responsibility as well, being the ultimate governing body for a very, very important institution like the University of Minnesota. The timing, I think, is critical with a new president coming in terms of the difficult decisions that you're facing and helping wrestle with. And I think something that perhaps I could be equally helpful with as a academic would be to assist other regents in understanding the academic culture, which is unique. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, but it is a unique culture. And for lay people, a lay board, to understand that, I think, is very important, and I would hope I could help that. If I'm fortunate enough, and I really mean fortunate enough to be chosen as a regent, my plan would be to move to our permanent house in Baxter after I finish my presidency, and for any duties that would be involved prior to that, certainly I would be here, and it would be a great pleasure and honor to do so. And if not chosen, frankly, we're still planning that move and look forward to the day when we can reside full-time in Baxter. And if I could, I'll close with just how I see that playing out a little bit. We have on the Board of Visitors for the University of Maine a retired four-star admiral, Greg Johnson, who I talked with on the phone on Monday. And Greg, after 32 or 34 years of being in the Navy, has come back and really plunged himself into helping the University of Maine and helping the state of Maine. And I've seen that work very, very effectively. And if anything, Greg is sort of a role model of how I anticipate hopefully helping the University of Minnesota, but helping the state, as I hope I have things and experiences and insight that I could contribute. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right. And we will call on the council members for questions. Lois, you are first. All right. I will add you, and I will add you to Lois Josephson.
Towards the end of your comments, we spoke about your strengths in envisioning and implementing. Prior to that, you gave an incredibly comprehensive and astonishing background that could serve the state of Minnesota. Let's go back to visioning and implementing. For me, the elephant in the room is, how does someone with that background that is so on target serve in the Board of Regents position with a new president and stop at visioning without going to implementing?
Yeah. Well, throughout my career, I've learned a lot from good managers and bad managers. And I've seen boards of trustees and regents. It's very important to maintain that fine line between advice and advocacy and providing insight when you can, but not micromanaging and usurping the role of the CEO. The regents have just hired a new president, and the new president has certain responsibilities, and the board is there to help, but not overstep. And I think I've seen both the good and the bad side of that, and I think I understand the fine line that distinguishes those two. I would want to serve and help in any way possible when asked. We tend to think of some of the day-to-day responsibilities of the president and the regents, but it's also important to think that some of the regents' greatest responsibilities are those things that you can't predict or forecast. The events of earlier this week in Arizona are certainly an example, or tragic accidents that have occurred on campuses across the country, certainly the bonfire tragedy when I was at Texas A&M. And I think one of the roles and one of the things I've thought quite a bit about is my experience, perhaps not as rich as you imply, but in my experience, I've been through a lot of those things, and I think I could add value to the discussion and the dialogue that regents need to play, because it's those unusual things, in fact, that are probably the most important ways that regents are called on, rather than the day-to-day responsibilities that the CEO and the campus are managing.
Billy.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think there are a few people better able to understand the role of a board versus a management than someone who has been in your position. You've a very personal understanding of that role. I'm sure you are more aware than any of us are of the kind of fiscal problem that you would be walking into, something that I understand from your background you have dealt with very well in Maine. Another home state for me. I'm interested in your biomedical and research and your idea of technology transfer. I probably, looking at what kind of cuts that we all are quite sure are going to have to be made at Minnesota, I keep looking for being rescued by a technology transfer, by finding ways for the research at the university to be monetized in ways that have economic significance. Could you talk about that in terms of how realistic that is, what the steps are? You've obviously had great experience in that, and I think the university may have in the past faltered. I look at how the income we should have gotten from the taconite discoveries, and I don't want to see that happen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's been an area that I've worked in, particularly at Texas A&M and at the University of Maine, and feel that it's very important. And as the comment that I described from the director of the U.S. Patent Office, I think indicates that we've done a good job. And in the time that I've been at the University of Maine, I think the state has seen how we've elevated economic development and really are contributing to the state's economy. And that's important, and that's at the foundation of technology transfer. Certainly, the University of Minnesota has so many assets in terms of its technology, and I can't say that they need improvement or should do more or should have done more in terms of transferring that. At the same time, as important as that is, as a research professional over the years, there are very few campuses that bring in more than $1 million.
Is that right?
A lot of people really see technology transfer as the sacred cow that's going to bail the university out. They see it as Gatorade at the University of Florida or Warfarin at the University of Wisconsin. But very few, it's a handful of universities that raise more than $1 million. So it's something that has to be pursued. I think there are opportunities there. $1 million in Maine and probably even in Minnesota is still a fair amount of money. So to enhance that is important. But I think to think of it as the salvation that's going to make the key difference in solving the state's significant budget problems is probably not as easy as you'd like to think.
I have heard that presented to others as a panacea, and I'm interested in your remarks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sir, you are a treasure. You are.
Can we stop there?
You may know more about the running of a university and the challenges than anybody in the state. I mean, seriously, it's not an ounce of facetiousness in my comment.
Well, we
need to find a way for you to make a contribution to our university.
That's true.
Without any question. And
that's what I would like to do, whether it's as a regent or anything else.
No, we're right. We need to really think about how doing that. But my colleague Lowe said it's the elephant in the room. It's the only question. The only question is how you could integrate into that board and act as a board member and not just jump out of your skin on every issue. I don't mean this to be funny.
No.
Important, significant contribution to make based on this vast experience that you have. And I can't imagine that you could do that successfully. And one of the ways I've tried to think about this is in terms of our new president coming in. Would he just say, go get that guy and put him on this board of regents? Or would he say, damn it, Jesus, I can't even contemplate. I mean, seriously, address those issues.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Well, I appreciate, and I'm sure you've exaggerated a little bit my ability to help out.
I don't think so.
And I've wrestled with this, but I've also thought about the boards that I've worked with over the years and seen the good and the bad.
Maybe
even have seen some ugly. But I think my personality is not overstepping my responsibilities and my duties. So I think I've got an appreciation of wanting to help and be of service whenever I could, but understanding the role that a regent could play.
Mm-hmm.
And the role of a regent is huge enough the way it is without stepping into the management of the university. I also have an enormous respect for the student body and the faculty and the staff and not overreaching the role that a regent really should have. So as I've looked at ways that I might be able to contribute in much the same way as the Admiral has done in Maine as he came back to the state, I've looked at the university and the regent's positions in the past and thought about, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be maybe some way that I could help a state and a institution that I dearly love? So that's why I'm here. And you present sort of a little bit the other side of it or the danger, and I hope that I've got the savvy and good sense to help when I can and stay out of those areas where they really wouldn't need my help.
Well, they probably need your help in all of them. I can't imagine that they would, and you wouldn't have something to add.
Well,
but But isn't there some other way you could do that? So you'd be doing it all day, every day.
Well,
all right. Well, please.
The university went through quite a process under President Brunig to develop their kind of their vision of being one of the top research universities in the world. Considering the budget crunch and the fact that we have a new president coming in, what's your view on that vision? Is that still an appropriate vision? How would you integrate that vision or a newer vision with the new president?
Yeah. Well, I think it's very important to have lofty goals, and in part that's what President Brunig has done. And to aspire to be one of the three top research universities in the country is lofty, and it's good to have things that will cause the institution to stretch. At the same time, it's not easy to become one of the top three. If you look at the top 20, there's a reach for the University of Minnesota, and I can't say that there's been sort of a slippage or a decline, but status quo is not sufficient because other universities are making progress. So for the University of Minnesota to maintain its position, there needs to be a vision and leadership and a lot of good work and budget support. There also has to be a focus, a strategic vision or direction, if you will. And I can't speak for the University of Minnesota, but most universities can't be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. So it really does require a focus and making some strategic decisions on and perhaps capitalizing on certain strengths that the University of Minnesota has. And if they can't do this, maybe UCLA or the University of Georgia, that's where they do that. So it's very important. And I think my experience might be able to lend some insight. I feel I've got about as good of a appreciation of other land-grant top-tier institutions of anybody. I've served at six of the top 20 institutions in the country. A lot of those same top 20 are going through very difficult times. Texas A&M is going through a budget crunch, and they're going to lose 130 faculty. 5 years ago, under the Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, mm-hmm. his goal was to add 100 faculty members. So now, 5 or 6 years later, they're going in the hole deeper than they were when they implemented that plan. So it's very difficult, very challenging. And I think having a good strategic plan and a good strategic direction is good. It's good that it be practical and addresses the needs of the students in the state. That's what a land-grant mission is all about. And realizing that there are going to be some difficult decisions to make. Governor Baldacci a couple times recently, and I'm not sure what that means. I hope he meant it as a compliment. He said, "I have a backbone of steel." There are going to have to be some difficult decisions made by every public university across the country. And certainly in the state of Minnesota, that's true for you as well.
Out of curiosity, what is Maine's vision?
We're emphasizing engineering in particular and alternative energy. We probably have one of the most comprehensive alternative energy programs on a comparative basis across the country. We're pursuing what could be a $15 billion development project and 15,000 jobs in the state of Maine, which is huge in the state of Maine. And a focus on the needs of the state in a broader context. And over the past 10 years or so, I think the people across the state of Maine have really appreciated the very unique and instrumental role that the University of Maine can play and is playing. And in a way, that's a broader vision for making the University of Maine important to the people of Maine and hence getting their support.
Harriet.
Oh, wow. I now have 15 questions where I just had one when I raised my hand. My undergraduate degree is from the University of Alabama.
Okay.
Big competitor. Let's talk football for a few minutes.
Okay.
How important is building a stronger, better, greater, bigger football program to the University of Minnesota?
Athletics are extremely important to a flagship institution. I kid with our campus and especially our athletic department all the time that one of our sons with special needs lives with us in the president's house, and I kid that our family are UMaine's number one, two, and three fans, and I know where I sit, and that's number three. So our family supports Division I athletics at the University of Maine tremendously. And it's a way of engaging people. The coverage that athletics gets is unlike any other aspect of the university. That really goes back to Richard's question of making decisions and making priorities. The Gophers' football fortunes haven't been that good lately. I remember when they were national champions and used to follow them on the radio years ago. It's important that they be competitive. I don't know that it's important that they win the Big Ten title every year, but I think it's important that they remain competitive. But that alone is going to require some difficult decisions and some focus. Football, probably at the University of Minnesota and on many campuses, Alabama is certainly the premier sport. And because of that, takes a special emphasis or a priority for the university. So I would hope I could do... I'd love to be there in the new stadium to cheer them on, I can tell you that.
Thank you. Right.
Sylvia Calla.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Kennedy. see, you pointed out in your application that the declining state support, affordability, and accessibility for students are the greatest challenges that the university is facing. You also mentioned that your experience includes dealing with similar challenges, and I would like you to please elaborate a little bit on how you would use this very valuable and applicable experience to help protect students from tuition increases in the future.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest challenges among a plethora of challenges that higher education and certainly universities like you face. The university is there first and foremost for the students. There are many other missions, if you will, but first and foremost there for the students. And affordability and the economy, any university, and I bet the University of Minnesota is about the same, between 70 and 75% of the students at a public university receive some form of financial aid, and when they leave, the average is about a $20,000 debt. So they're already leaving in many cases. And in some cases, starting careers, it's going to make it difficult for them to pay back the loans they already have. And $20,000 is an average. When you consider that some have no debt, that means that others have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. So one of the most important things that I think the regions can have a hand in, and it's part of that balance of not micromanaging with the campus and the CEO, is helping set tuition levels and financial aid. And those are difficult challenges to make. And I think there's some creativity that can be brought to that process as well, to be very, very sensitive to the needs of the students so that many in the middle class are not priced out of a wonderful public higher education as the university offers.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, Jerry Rogers.
Thank you. I actually have a couple questions. The first question, I want to congratulate you on your good taste in ties. your question with that, do you wear that to Maine meetings?
I anticipated somebody would ask about that.
I have one of those.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I have a more serious question. You mentioned in the opening statement work you've done with Native Americans and Native Americans in education. And I have some knowledge about background about this, and I think in a lot of cases, especially that population of people, actually there's some money available to go to school, but they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And comment on them and maybe other disadvantaged students. Now, how does the university play a role in getting them a higher education?
Yeah. Maine has arguably an enviable program of any Native American student from any state in the country can come to Maine and receive free tuition and board.
Jesus.
But not...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. But it takes some money. But not that many students do it, which is to the point of your question. So it's exceedingly important. I don't know that I would want to publicize that program in 49 other states because it would present a challenge for us. But publicizing the opportunities that are available, and as you say, there is money available. And then also starting at an earlier stage than when students are in the 10th and 11th grade, visiting schools, doing as much as you can to publicize it. So I think reaching the outreach aspect of it at an earlier time is exceedingly important. So many young men and women, high school students, who don't go on to higher education lack sort of the knowledge. What they do understand, if they understand anything, is the professionals in their community. And they might be thinking of medical school or something else. But there's so many other options, and I really think a lot of it is reaching out to people across the state to make them aware of the opportunities and the help programs that might exist to get them to enroll in higher education.
Thank you.
All right, George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kennedy, I've kind of struggled with this question. The legislature has directed us to refer applicants who live either in the district where they are applying for or the state of Minnesota. You're applying for an at-large position. That's where you're put at. And you said that you're still a president of Maine University until June, but you would have no problem attending meetings and stuff here. Sorry. You have on your application the permanent address is in Baxter, Minnesota. I'd like you to expand on that a little bit, and you're probably going to have to, if you get the, and I have no doubt at all that you'll be referred to the joint committee, House and Senate. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but I think you will be. I've never seen such a background, and I agree completely with Mr. Thatcher here. But you're going to have to answer that question also, that can you be a president of the University of Maine and fulfill the requirements of a regent and the requirements of the district address? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And that's a very important question, a very logical question, and I've wrestled with it myself, quite frankly. I do know that Mary and I, throughout our career, wherever we've lived, our goal and expectation was always that we'd return to Minnesota, and that's where we'd reside. And we're very optimistically looking forward to that day coming sooner rather than later. Now, we built our house in Baxter about 20 years ago, with the idea that regardless of where we were, that would be our family home. And that's where our kids would identify with, and that's what we wanted them to identify with. And it has worked. You know, sometimes the best of family intentions don't work out. I'd have to say that this one has actually worked out quite well. There's no question either that if there are responsibilities between now and when I'd be living in Baxter permanently, I would do what is necessary to fulfill any expectation of a role as a regent if I were yes. fortunate enough to be chosen. I've seen, once I were here, my example of the Navy Admiral that helps us, the way that somebody can sort of plow themselves back into a commitment to help the state and to help an institution and a region that they love, and that's what I'm looking forward to. I've looked forward to that, frankly, most of my career and my life. So I think it can be done. Sort of if we use the flip side, our Board of Visitors, we strive to have people from out of state because of the experience that they can bring. If I have any reasonable experience that I could bring to the Board of Regents, it's because I've had experience across the country that I hope I could give back now at a period of time when I could devote myself to whatever extent it took to contribute to the Regents and the university. I'm as passionate about doing that and as hopeful as I could possibly be that I'd have the opportunity as anything I've ever done in my life.
Can I just follow up, Madam Chair? Can I ask you, Doctor, where you vote?
Vote currently in Maine.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, there's a legal question here. Have you asked counsel as whether or not you meet the requirements?
I have not.
I think it sounds to me like there's a serious question. If you vote someplace else, I mean, you know, the normal attributes of citizenship are where you vote, where you get a driver's license.
Access.
Access.
What church you belong to.
No.
I'm telling you, seriously, you do this in terms of the IRS and so on. These are actually the attributes that determine citizenship. And if you're out on all of them, I mean, I think it's a real problem. I think you need to talk to counsel.
Yeah. Well, I can say that as soon as possible, all of those things will change. That's our commitment, and that's what I'm.
You've been paying taxes.
I'm looking forward to it
today.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. All right. You solved that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
First of all, Dr. Kennedy, I also have a second home in Baxter, so there's some local issues I probably want to discuss with you.
The roads weren't on there very well on Monday night.
Well, I have a type of two-part question. In your application, you make the statement, I have advanced that institution, meaning the University of Maine, in a way that has frequently been referred to as transformational, and you put parentheses around those, and I was wondering if you could explain that. And the second part to that question would be that we do have at least two systems, maybe three, of higher education in the state of Minnesota, private colleges and universities, and then our Minnesota State College and University system. And would you have any notions or have you had any experience in promoting cross programming or shared facilities among different institutions of that nature?
Yeah. Great question, because I think I've got a great answer. didn't mean to be flip at all, but Terry McTaggart, who some of you know, who formerly served as chancellor of the Minscu system, wrote and is the leading expert across the country in transformational changes in higher education. And he has attributed to me, and why I cited it in my application materials, that during my tenure as president at the University of Maine, we have truly done what could be regarded as transformational. And the feedback I get from legislators and others across the state reinforces the success that we've had. One of the things that I've done, and it was a strategic direction when I took over as president, was to leverage whatever assets the University of Maine had by cooperating with some other institutions across the state, particularly the Jackson Laboratory, which is the world's preeminent mammalian genetics laboratory. And at the time, it was regarded as the sort of the epitome of success in the state of Maine. 10 years later, that's the position that the University of Maine has. And we've done it by cooperating in the biomedical area all across the state with the Jackson Laboratory, with the Maine Medical Center Research Institute, several different institutions. We started some new programs like the Graduate School of Biomedical Sciences. One of our most recent initiatives in the engineering area, where it's a very strategic direction in alternative energy, we're developing a campus at the former Brunswick Naval Air Station that's closing out, and the last planes have already left. And we're doing it with Southern Maine Community College. Never has there been such an integral collaboration between a community college and a university. In fact, it's always been sort of hands-off, and we wouldn't want to ever
stoop.
Thank you. To cooperating. Mm-hmm. And on Saturday of last week, I was asked to write a chapter with the president of Southern Maine Community College on transformation and how different members of different systems could work together. I really think there's an enormous opportunity. And you just have to get off your high horse a little bit and look at opportunities and look at ways that there could be a synergy. You don't want winners and losers, but I think there are so many more opportunities where there are winners and winners than there are anything else. And that's been in my inaugural address, I talked about and coined a phrase, a new kind of land-grant university, to put it in other terms. Mm-hmm. And part of what that meant was cooperating across the state with different institutions. And I think that should be the role of a land-grant institution. And it goes back to the budget questions. Maybe there are some things that some other part of a system can do that the U doesn't need to do, or maybe, Lord forbid, might not even do it as well as the other institution. So it's very important.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Jim Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And President Kennedy, thank you for bringing your obvious talents to offer to the university, and thank you particularly for being unlike a lot of you. You're my generation. You're moving back to Minnesota, not the south or west, southeast or southwest corner of the country. So
I frequently kid. We're one of the few families that go to Minnesota every Christmas to
thank you for that. And I'm going to ask in my first, I have two a short question and a more longer one. In my first, I'm going to ask you to humor me. All our colleagues have asked questions of all the candidates, and I too. All of them, one at least one of the interviewees says, that's a great question or that's a tough question. I haven't gotten that response yet. Can you just say, that's a great question? The university struggles with what its message to the public is and has tried recently to refine it to three words. You know what those three words are?
Afraid I don't.
But it's a brilliant question.
Now, just to let you off the hook a little bit, I'm going to ask the members here to raise their hand if they know what those three words are. How many people know what the three-word branding of the University of Minnesota is?
Is it commitment to excellence?
Driven to discover.
Oh, to discover.
No, but Jim, that's really four words.
Driven to discover. I can't count. But you see, so half the group here didn't know that either. You get a pass. But thanks for saying it.
You put the lead.
And secondly, do you know, informationally, do you personally know President-elect Kaler?
I do not.
What would you, maybe it's easier to answer this question that way, what would you think he would say to Paul Thatcher's question about wanting another college president on his board?
Yeah, and again, it is a good question. I want to give some thought to. I know his the CEO of the Stony Brook campus quite well, and have interacted with her on many occasions. I think it would be a reasonable question for him to ponder, and I would hope after we have a chance to talk and to meet that I could assuage any concerns that he have that I would be there to help him. I would hope it would be an asset, having had some experience with the kinds of things that he will face. At the same time, I would see my role as regent as one of trying to help him in any way possible, and I think that is one of the most important roles of a regent is to help the CEO. But at the same time, if there are suggestions or one regent can only offer suggestions and advice, and have you thought about this, that, or the other thing? Or as you're cutting budgets, what about this approach, or whether it's student aid or something else? Have you thought about that?
Thank you.
All right, Patrick Duncan.
Thank you. My first question, I'm going to ask you to draw back on your undergraduate and maybe graduate studies, and what is it unique about the Murdoch area that can produce leaders and families like the Yost family and the Fredricksons and yourselves?
Yeah. Well,
is there something in the soil or the water?
Dave Fredrickson is a cousin-in-law, and we've been in touch, and he's a wonderful, wonderful person. Certainly the Yost family are on the adjacent farm where I grew up. I don't know, but I think they're... I mentioned 4-H, and it's a rural area. I've often described myself as a farm kid from western Minnesota, and that's the way I think of myself.
I'm actually going to interrupt, and knowing those families, and particularly one of them fairly close. In fact, as I was reading your application, I missed something earlier, and so I'm sitting here frantically sending a text during your opening comments, trying to get more information. Is this guy really for real? Which has become apparent to me that you are. But you made a comment.
Great question.
Yeah.
You made a comment about the a new role of a land grant institution, mm-hmm. and you started down a path that I would like to hear a little bit more about, but we don't have much time. If you can give me a couple more morsels.
Well, and it I'll try to elaborate just a little bit, but in thinking about assuming the presidency at the University of Maine, I was thinking about how I can help be transformative in that institution. Even then, 10 years ago, with all the challenges that higher education faced. And one of the things I appreciated was that the University of Maine at the time did not have a very good reputation. Yeah. Two trustees, they're trustees rather than regents there, but two trustees a little bit later in some informal meetings said when they became trustees, they worried about the survival of the University of Maine. Mm-hmm. And in a reverse way, they were telling me that in no way did they expect the University of Maine to have the ascendancy that it has had in recent times. And part of that strategy was to be visible. I spend about 70% of my time off campus with the legislature, with businesses, working in various things. The University of Maine was seen as the University of Northern Maine because it was, for most of the population, it was up there someplace and sort of an ivory tower that didn't really have an immediacy and an impact on the people across the state. I'm not saying it's perfect, but we've come a long way. And that different kind of a new model for a land-grant university was part of that strategy. I just knew that we had to reach out and take advantage of the assets that the state had, that the university, through its programs, could leverage. On Friday of this week, when I get back, we're going to have what we call a legislative bus tour. All the new legislators come to campus, and they do this every year. And every year when we have a group like that, I kid about it now. Most people know it. I kid about that because at the end of the presentation and their time on campus, most of them say, I had no idea. Well, they have no idea of things that are going on at the university. And maybe the University of Minnesota is different, but I bet that the people of Maine, the people of Minnesota, like Maine, many of them would say, I have no idea that the university is doing this, that it has this potential, that it's reaching this many students, that it's that significant of a factor in the future of this great state. And that's what the University of Minnesota is all about.
100%. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Paul Taylor?
Who wants to bid on my question? I saw my question.
You're
to Jennifer.
First round draft choice. No, I can't do that.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Could I? Right, I just don't want to run out.
Quick question. This is just the I was next on the list. You've just started the process. You've got to talk to 201 legislators with party changes and many new people. Let's assume you can get over the legal hurdle. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do that and make your case that they can see that a jewel has emerged in our midst?
Well, yeah, you're here.
You're all very, very kind, and I appreciate it. It's, again, a question. Brilliant, again. I've given some thought to. Anytime I have the opportunity to spend time in the state, I feel privileged and I'm delighted. So if it takes time, I'm certainly committed to doing that. I've thought about using sort of a modern technology to communicate electronically, if that's possible. Yeah. Phone calls of friends and others, even getting the reaching into the university. If there are other ways that others, say the faculty, could see somebody who has faculty experience could help. Certainly, have thought about that. I don't know if it's possible. But sort of pulling out all the stops. I've spent time on different floors looking at all the different. Legislators' names. There are a lot of them. So it's an awesome task to think about contacting all of them. But a lot of good friends. Mary and I, our entire families are in Minnesota. I called my brother in Mora and said, if it gets that far, who do you know in the legislature? And he said, fortunately, he doesn't know anybody. So I think he knew that I was about to ask him for a favor if it got to that. But try to reach as many people as possible.
Can any more comment? And I think it's just so critical given the demographic shifts of the country, and with all due respect, but this issue of, you know, communities not knowing about opportunities. Mm-hmm. I actually have had the privilege of being in Minnesota leading a lot of college access and youth development in all communities of color, and frankly, we have information gaps. Because mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing, cell phone companies and MTV know how to reach the Native American community.
Yeah.
So I encourage you, because you're doing some writing, and I'm also doing writing exploring how these communications happen between, especially the emerging Latino community. But I encourage you to look at the National College Access Network, NCAN, who's done some amazing innovations in all communities of color getting to higher education.
Okay. Thank you. Very, very good suggestion. Thank you.
Wait 1 minute. 1 minute. Sonia.
My question has been asked.
David Swanson.
I really appreciate your comments today. I've come from an academic background and an industry background. So and also have passion for your Navy connections here. It's true to my heart. But you made one comment in there that one of the challenges of public institutions is competition from the for-profit sector. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because last summer when all of our family was together at our place in Baxter, after an extended dinner, we were talking about the challenges of face higher education, and two or three of our sons and daughter-in-law are in the business, so to speak. And I brought up that one of the biggest challenges for public higher education was the for-profit sector. And a bunch of young people happened to be family members, but to a person, they had no idea what I was talking about. And since last summer, the competition between the for-profit and the not-for-profit has reached almost epic proportions, to the point of which Congress is thinking of establishing guidelines. About, I think I'm correct, in 80%, and this goes to some of the former questions, about 80% of the federal financial aid goes to for-profit companies. Mm-hmm. And the delinquency rate is about 40 to 50%. So there is a competition, and I don't want to come out disparaging the for-profit sector, because they have a role to play, but I think there are some things happening right there that are a serious challenge to public higher education that I think Congress, state legislators, regents need to be aware of, and it's not over yet.
I want them on the record.
Thank you.
All right. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Kennedy, mine is a comment. I when you said about funding in Maine, people said, I had no idea what the university is doing. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest problem in the state of Minnesota also. We go to the legislature and ask for money, but people elect legislator people to not raise any taxes, don't do anything. I think the university has to advertise the fact what they're doing. You did it in Maine. I think that is a great idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It is one of the biggest challenges we face. And it's frustrating, I can tell you from my position, because you think you're doing everything possible, and you do newsletters, and you do visits, and you spend 75% of your time talking about the university, and you get an important visitor to campus, and they say, I had no idea you were doing this. So it's an endless task, and certainly technology can help today. We started a marketing plan when I became president. We had no marketing effort, really.
Okay, Jerry Rogers, you have the last question.
Well, I actually have a question that you don't have to answer if you want.
Okay.
Because the thought I had, we're kind of one step in the process of becoming a regent. And I entirely agree with the other people who said that your background experience is beyond reproach as far as abilities to do this. If somehow you do not get appointment at this time, what sort of things do you feel that you can add to this university as another citizen of the state? Mm-hmm. I said, you don't have to answer that because I don't want to make this anything in any way negative to your application for this.
And I've thought about that too, and I'm certainly aware that although I appreciate your role and I appreciate the state of Minnesota establishing this, because this is unlike any of the regent or trustee processes that I'm familiar with any place else around the country. So it's a very good step. But I realize the next step is it's largely political. In the area that I have probably the biggest deficiency in is that I haven't been living permanently in the state for long and don't have the political connections that some others might. I was hoping that some other strengths that I might have would carry the day. But if not as a regent, and I'm still hopeful, I'm an eternal optimist, if not a regent through my career I would like to do something to give back to the state and to the university other than attend athletic events, which I'll surely be doing, that might be able to have some positive effect. I don't know quite what that will be, but if not a regent, I'll be searching for other things that I can help. And it's going to be here. That's where it's going to be.
Madam Chair, could I just, to that point, the regents or the group here should know, and you should know, sir, that in the next cycle, 2 years from now, there are 3 at-large regent positions open, just FYI. So.
Is it really only 2, Jim, because one is a student?
It's
isn't one a student, Jim?
Is that correct?
Yes.
One is a student.
Yes, because there are 4.
All right.
Yes.
But 2.
All right. we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Would you like to give a brief closing statement?
Well, I would comment on the process here in the state and at the University of Minnesota, which I think is a very good process. You've, through the RCAC, you've added an element of sort of rationality and logic that this process doesn't have in many other states, and I appreciate that. I wouldn't be here, I don't think, if not for that. I would just reiterate my passion for the university and the state. I do want to help in some way, and maybe there are, I'm sure, multiple ways that I could do that. But I see this as, to me, it was one of the most logical, given the career that I've had, and given the interests and looking toward the future, that both Mary and I, when we are lodged in Baxter, hope that we can contribute to the community and to the state. So thank you all for your
Thank you for offering your considerable talents to the state of Minnesota University, and thank you for your support.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your reverse migration.